Welcome to the Lax Worm and Coach Bear Show, your lacrosse odyssey for news, stories, and special guests. So sit back, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
All righty, Bear Davis. I got to say, you got us a fantastic guest today. I never spoke to this guest in my whole entire time doing this podcast stuff, and I always wanted to. So, Bear, thank you for getting Coach Petromala on the line. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mike. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. I'll lead this because we try not to let Bear say too much in the beginning because he usually upsets the guests and then we lose them.
Okay.
See how it is here, Coach? See how it works around here? I mean, geez.
Yeah, well, it's good. It's good to know the ground rules quickly, Coach.
Know the rules of the game right off the bat. Let's go.
So, Coach,
exactly right.
So, Coach, what's keeping you busy? I mean, obviously, you know, this is the season you're not coaching this season, unfortunately. I mean, I was always a huge fan, but not coaching. Give us a little rundown. How are you keeping yourself busy? I see you on social media. You're doing all kinds of things, but give us a little rundown of what you're doing. Coach?
Must be a technical difficulty here.
Yeah, I think we lost.
I need to.
You there?
Redial.
Coach, you there?
There we go. There we go.
I am.
I lost you for a second there, but now we have you back. That's good. So I'm sorry. You probably right. Started answering the question and we lost you a little bit, but. I guess, you know.
That's all right. You know what? I'm gonna try and go to a better spot here, and so hopefully you don't lose me again.
Perfect. Perfect. The old modern technology. What would we have done without all this modern technology?
Who knows? Who knows? You know what? We'd probably have a much better life.
You're right. Funny story. I pulled in a. It was like an old gas station, and they had the phones, you know, the old payphones, and they still had some there. And my son looked at me, and he said, "Why are those outside?" And I just lost it. I couldn't believe it because he has no idea what those old – I mean, he knows what they are, obviously, but he never was around when they were being used, so it was kind of comical.
Those old payphones used to be where I would stop at the rest stops coming down up and down 95 in the Jersey Turnpike to make a couple of recruiting calls at night when we were on our way back or on our way to an event.
Wow, that must have been crazy, huh? I can't even imagine having to stop on those payphones nowadays, but that's the way everyone did it, right? Everyone jumped on those phones and had them. I always liked when you put your window up and you had the wire in there and you could put the phone on, so you were in your car there.
Those were the days of the old calling cards. You know, every university that you worked at, you know, they gave you a calling card instead of a cell phone, and if you needed to make long distance calls or things like that, you used the old calling card.
That's right. That's right. So, Coach, I asked you, and we lost you for a second there, but you know what's keeping you busy nowadays?
Yeah, so again, as I said, I'm very grateful. I've been fortunate since my time at Hopkins came to an end. I took a position with a group called LSG, Legendary Sports Group. It's owned and run by a gentleman by the name of Brendan Kelly. You might recognize that name. I know Coach Davis would. He is the former owner of the Chesapeake Bay Hawks and also the owner of SmartLink, which is a cellular group. And does a lot of other things, has a great affinity and passion for lacrosse. It's in his family. He played, kids play. And he started Legendary Sports Group, and the gentleman that kind of heads up Legendary Sports Group for him is a gentleman by the name of Dave Cottle, who, again, I'm sure you remember Coach Cottle was the former head coach at then Loyola College, now Loyola University, and the University of Maryland. I had a chance to work for Coach Cottle for a year, so I have a great relationship with him. We work with another guy named Matt Florio, who played at Towson. So as you can imagine, it's full of lacrosse. And what we do is we put on lacrosse events. Mm-hmm. Whether they're camps, clinics, events, we're currently putting on a number of events through the name Five Star, which is an elite, high-end event where the best 23s or 24s are attending. We're doing a tournament for high school teams and having that tournament play to a championship. So I've been able to remain very close to the game. You know, and the beauty of this is I've remained very connected to the most important recruiting classes, which is, you know, going to be the 23s and 24s. You know, my sons were both in the class of 22, so I knew that one pretty well. But in prep admitted and every kid we invited, and I'm currently doing the same for the class of 24s. So, you know, what's been neat is in part doing some of the stuff that I was doing as a college coach, which is evaluating players. The only difference is now my level of interaction is able to be quite different. You know, instead of, you know, the recruiting call or the email or the text, you know, I'm allowed to have contact with these kids whenever I want, their families. So it's been really nice to get to know these kids, and hopefully if another job comes up, whether that's a head coaching job or an assistant coaching position at a Power 5 school, you know, I've got an advantage knowing the class of 23 and 24 pretty well. And then the other thing I'm doing is, you know, I've volunteered a little bit of my time. Sadly, you know, in the coaching ranks, and Coach Davis understands this, you're an absentee dad more often than you'd like to be, and you spend more time with other kids, other families' kids. And so I'm volunteering my time over at Boys Latin, helping out at practice a little bit, keeping the whistle in my mouth, and helping coach, at least in practice. I try to stay on the field on game day and be a parent, but at least in practice. And I've been around my twin boys every day at practice, and a pretty special group of young men. So, you know, finding different ways to keep busy.
So, you know, I want to go back to Hopkins a second. I don't want to dwell on it. Obviously, you were there for quite a while, and the whole situation there, and I'm sure you've spoken about this over and over again, but just for our folks that listen to us, that give me a little rundown of your thoughts. Was that a surprise? Was there something leading up to that? How did that all come about for you?
Well, you know, it's interesting how things happen, and I was blessed. I worked for a great president and had a great partnership with a president by the name of Dr. Bill Brody, and the vice president at the time, the executive assistant, was a guy by the name of Jerry Steinman, who was a Hopkins Hall of Famer and an all-time great face-off guy. So when I took the job, you know, I felt like I had a partnership with guys. And what I found out is the longer you stay, the more things change. You know, you wind up outliving and outlasting a lot of people. You know, so you go through a number of different admissions directors and a number of different heads of academic advising, and then a different president. And, you know, obviously, you know, in my last year, it was the third athletic director that had been there during my tenure. You know, and times change and places change, and people change. You know, and I just think, you know, what happened is, you know, we had found a way of being successful. You know, I felt like we had let the early recruiting better of us a little bit, you know, and made some mistakes there. But at the end of the day, you know, you've got a philosophy. You know, this is the way you believe in doing things. And, you know, again, places change. The names, the faces, the beliefs, the philosophy, the direction of the university, all that stuff changes. And, you know, we just felt like it was time to move in different directions. And, you know, I miss the young men on the team terribly. I still watch them. I follow them. I root for them personally, and for their well-being and success. You know, but, you know, I've found, you know, the longer coaches are at one place, you know, it usually doesn't end, you know, great. You know, you look at guys like Bobby Bowden and Paterno, and, you know, thankfully there was no incident here, but just, you know, our ships were sailing in different directions, and they felt like, you know, it might be best for them to move in a different direction. And quite frankly, I felt the same. Hmm. And, you know, with change comes new opportunities. And I'm, you know, I've been excited. I've remained close to the game. Still the IMLCA, the Coaches Association liaison to the Division I Rules Committee. And I'm still on the IMLCA Board of Directors. So I've remained connected with the game and the coaches at the college level. And had a chance to, you know, to reevaluate, look at things that our staff did and we did well, and look at things that maybe we could have done better, and also spend some time watching other programs practice and talking to other coaches and finding out the different things they might be doing that, you know, you say, wow, you know what, we could do that. That we did better than them, or, you know what, we could do that a little bit better. So it's been exciting to watch, to listen and learn. It's amazing what people will tell you when you're not the head coach of Johns Hopkins and how much information they're willing to share with you. And I'm just looking forward to the next, Mike, and anxious and hopeful it comes sooner rather than later.
Well, let's talk about the kids for a second, the players that are there, because I always find this, you know, interesting when a coach leaves a program. And, you know, they've recruited the players, essentially, and then, you know, new coach comes in and assumes the players that you recruited. How difficult, you said you root for the kids, obviously, and that says a lot about you as a coach and a person, but how difficult is that for you and for the players?
Well, you know, I can't speak for anyone else, but I can speak for myself. And you know, one of the things I loved about our staff, which was Bob Benson, Bill Dwan, and Tim Obransky, is we were invested in the kids. And, you know, we cared deeply for them. We knew them. We knew their families. We knew their lives, whether it was, you know, their girlfriends, a divorced home, a death in the family. You know, we knew them and we cared about them. So when you have those kinds of relationships, and I'm a big believer that relationships drive this, and drive your success. You know, it's hard. It's hard to say goodbye. You know, I'm not real good with goodbyes, so it's hard to leave. You know, we left behind what I think's you know, turned out, as you saw at the end of the Big Ten season, you know, talented group. You know, got Williams and Joey Epstein and Connor DeSimone. That's a pretty good attack. So, you know, it's a challenge, but you know, you also have to, you want to maintain those relationships, but you have to allow them to develop relationships with their new coaches, or, you know, find out what life is like under a different group, and, you know, be the coach that poisons the well, so to speak. So, you know, while I do follow them closely, I would be honest with you, I haven't had a lot of close contact. Out of respect for the new staff and their desire and ability to, you know, to do their stuff and to get to know the kids and develop those relationships there.
Coach, you, this has obviously been a unique spring for you. And I know certainly, you know, I've been through it as a coach where, you know, you're at some place and you're invested and it's a daily routine for you. And like you said, you build relationships, all over the place. And then, all of a sudden you're sitting there in the spring in a different, you know, wearing a different hat, a different shirt and, you know, building new relationships. And now this is that time of the year though, where, you know, this job comes open. And certainly I know, Coach Cottle, who you're close with there, always has a pulse on that stuff. It seems like he probably knows before the coach knows that his job's about ready to be open. It seems like at times,
I would agree.
Yeah. So is that something that, you know, you kind of keep your eye on the NCAA news, or Coach Cottle give you a call and say, hey, or is that something that you're looking for? Or is it, if the right opportunity comes your way, great. If not, you're just going to keep plugging away, or how are you approaching that?
Well, it's a great question and I appreciate it. You know, I've always been a believer in preparation. So what I've done is, you know, I've continued to prepare. You know, while I'm not at a college practice every day, I speak to college coaches. I ask them, talk to them about culture, about standards. You know, I've been very interested to talk with other coaches about, you know, their culture, their standards, their core values, their core pillars, you know, how they handle today's athlete. And again, it's been great. You know, I watched an interview a while back with Mack Brown, who was the former head football coach at Texas. And obviously, you know, Mack Brown had great success there, won a championship, and you know, competed for another. You know, one of the things he said was that when he got away from it, you know, rather than feel sorry for himself that he wasn't a part of it, he took advantage of his opportunity. So what he did was when he got involved with broadcasting, he said he would go and on these trips to these other schools, when he was getting ready for a game week, he would watch them practice, would watch the different things that they did, kind of take notes, you know, mental notes on what he liked, what he didn't like, what was innovative, what was, you know, he didn't think fit him. And he also watched and you know, evaluated assistant coaches and, you know, who might be a guy that if he winds up, you know, back in, you know, in football with a whistle around his neck, who might be the assistants that I might be interested in hiring. And I really, you know, that really resonated with me. And I've kind of tried to take that approach, which is, you know, think about what I would do differently. What could I do better as a head coach? What could, you know, what did we do that was, you know, afforded us an opportunity to be successful? What's the profile of the young man and the athlete that I want to attract if I happen to be in another place? You know, so I've taken that time to prepare. I've certainly utilized this time and the great silver lining is to be around my twin boys who, you know, to be at practice with them, to be at their games and not miss those things has really been a real blessing for me. Like I said, I spent more time with other people's kids than my own. So if in fact, you know, coach, one of these opportunities opens, I'm open to being a head coach again. I would love to, but I'm also open to being an assistant coach. If that's the way I gotta, you know, that's the path I have to take to get back in the game. I just want it to be at a place that's, you know, got a chance to compete at the highest level and for a championship. I believe I could help a program. I would love to be around another program and, you know, again, continue to grow and learn, you know, and even if it's a Division III job, you know, I think being on a sideline at the right, maybe Division III job that can compete for a title, you know, it's better than not being on the sideline. And again, I look at football and you look at all these coaches that have, you know, parted ways with institutions and what do? They go be an assistant at another place. They get back in the game and then they move on to be a head coach again if the opportunity arises. So while that's not really prevalent in our sport, I'm not against taking one of those routes at all. So again, we'll see what happens. I've got my ear to the ground, and I certainly have Coach Cottle, who has been a great friend and, you know, a good mentor, you know, and he serves as a great resource. And obviously my connections through the IMLCA and peers and colleagues, you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, I have an opening as an assistant coach. I have a 7-8 team that I coach. I'd love to have you on the sidelines with me, Coach.
Well, you know what? I learned this. You always have to listen. And I think, you know, one of the things I learned from, you know, my friend Bill Belichick, coach's greatest attribute amongst many is that he is a phenomenal listener. No matter who it is and no matter what you do, he's always looking for a nugget as to how to get better, how to improve, how he can help his team. You know, so for me, I think it would be a mistake if I keep my ears open and have a willingness to listen. You never know.
No, Coach, that's great. That's great. And there's so many things you just said in that last, you know, that just answering that question that I just took notes on myself, just thinking to myself, like, even when there was a time, you know, where I've applied for assistant coaching positions. And then after being a head coach at Division I level and you know, one thing I really started to see is just how different the hiring process is in lacrosse versus football. Like there's so many or big sports. Like there's so many things that our sport, I feel, doesn't do a great job of. And I don't know where it stems from. You know, it's like I see occasionally you'll see, you know, it's happened before, you know, where a mid-tier, you know, like I would give you a prime example for myself. You know, like I was at Robert Morris. We had just beat Penn State 2 years in a row. Their job yep. opening, it came open. I applied for it, and I didn't get a call. So I think that was a turning point in my career for me, knowing that in football, the AD calls that guy from the mid-tier school that just beat your school, just to, even if it was just to pick his brain for an interview, like, how do you do it? You know, like, how do you
sure,
do it?
Sure.
I'm not in the circle. You know, at that point, I figured I'm not in that network. I'm not in that circle. And I didn't really want to count myself out, but it was like one of those things where I'm like, yeah, I'm probably out. Like, I'm probably never going to get that call. And right. I've also found that. Go ahead, Coach.
Well, what I say is, you know, our sport is growing, and we're learning a lot from football and basketball. You know that just from a recruiting standpoint. You look at how things are done now, and from a technological standpoint, and now we're starting to get into NIL and those kinds of things. So, you know, my hope is that, you know, guys like you who are talented coaches and that do a good job will have those opportunities in the future. And, you know, I know for me, you know, my challenge is, okay, I'm 53, and, you know, our athletic director's looking for the, you know, the new up-and-comer and, you know, the young and aspiring coach that, you know, has done a great job. And, you know, I'm confident in my abilities, and, you know, I just got to get my foot in the door. But, you know, it's one of those things where our sport continues to grow, and we see changes in our sport, you know, every year. And, you know, we can only do what we can do. You know, we can only control the controllables. And, you know, if a job opens up and it's one that I'm interested, I'll be certain to take a look at it. You know, I like to believe I've got good references and, you know, a good resume. But at the end of the day, you want to be where people want you. I'm sure you recruited kids and you wanted guys that wanted your school. You didn't want to have to convince them or talk them into being there. And I feel pretty strongly about that. So hopefully that place is out there and out there sooner rather than later, Coach.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the D3, and I think that's interesting because I know you obviously have spent some time, you know, in the Ivies where I wouldn't say that's obviously not D3, but the recruiting, it, you know, as far as like without, you know, scholarship money and some, a lot of, you know, the high end D3s are high academic, you know, equivalent. So it's interesting you mentioned that and Gettysburg's open. I mean, I looked at that before you jumped on. I talked to Mike. I was like, that seems like it might be, what a great fit that might be. And I was like, would he even be considered, you know, considering a D3? But just like the Gettysburg, like when you see that job open up, is that, I mean, it's got to be intriguing for you, right?
Well, I would say this, you know, I know Mike. He's the former associate of Johns Hopkins and have a great relationship and think an awful lot of him as a human being and an athletic director. You know, I would consider D3 if it was a place where, you know, I thought you could compete at the highest level and win a championship. You know, ultimately, I'd like to be back in Division I. You know, I don't feel like I have to rush to get there, but if my path is that I have to prove myself again, I worked hard to become a head coach, and I'm not willing to work hard again to prove myself again. In a place like, you know, Gettysburg is, I think they do have resources. I mean, Hank Jancic did a tremendous job there for years and years. And, you know, I think the resources are in place. You know, you got to figure out, is it the right situation for you? Is it the right situation financially for your family? But I do think it's a place that can have success in. And as I said, I just think for me, I have to approach this, you know, the best way for me. And I want to be back on the sideline. And, you know, I don't want to pigeonhole myself. And I'd certainly love to be back in a Power 5 program coaching for a national championship. but you know, things happen. Jobs don't necessarily open up. Timing is never what you isn't always what you want it to be. And I've got to be willing to adjust, change, and do what, you know, do the things we did as a staff to be successful at Hopkins. You know, I got to do the same thing when it comes to the coaching landscape.
Coach, you said something that was interesting to me, is the new up-and-comers out there. Do you think Petromala is a name that's intimidating for some places? I mean, I look at you and I'm sitting there saying, well, he'd never come here. Or do you think that helps you or hurts you? Because it's interesting to me. I sit there and I say, here's a guy that I know you're saying, hey, you'd like to prove yourself again. I think you've proven yourself. I think you're obviously, you know, I would put you up there in the icon of the sport. I mean, your name is well known. But do you think that also plays against you a little bit from a coaching perspective?
Well, you know, I'd like to believe I have some kind of sense of humility. You know, and you never know how the outside world views you. You know, when you look in the mirror, we all view ourselves a certain way. And you just don't know, does everybody else view me like I view myself? You know, and I don't look at myself, you know, you use the word icon. I mean, I'm flattered to hear that, but I don't view myself as that. You know, I view myself as a guy that loves to coach, that loves to work with young men and help develop young men to be successful, you know, on the lacrosse field, in the classroom, and in life. But, you know, I think we're always trying to prove ourselves. I've always believed that. I don't think you can rest on your laurels. I never did it when I was an assistant coach or a head coach, and I won't start. It's not the, you know, it's not the, it's not part of my DNA, and hopefully it's not part of what I've taught my sons. Is you never rest on your, you know, what you've achieved yesterday. You know, there's always more. But I don't know if it's intimidating. I do believe that for a head coach, you've got to be a pretty secure guy to hire a former head coach at Hopkins to be your assistant. But that's the kind of guy I'd love to work with. Yeah. I'm not looking to take anybody's job. I'm looking to coach and work with young men and help them compete and win at the highest level. You know, and again, when and where and how that takes place, I wish I had a crystal ball and was that smart, but I'm not. So, you know, we'll just continue to prepare and, you know, as Coach said, keep our ears to the, you know, to the ground and, you know, see what Coach Cottle finds out and what we hear, and then we'll go from there.
Coach, you talked about developing young men, and certainly you've had your fair share of development of young men, and some of those are doing great things now, of course, or a lot of them are, and two of them, you have Paul Rabel, and you have Kyle Harrison, and you have these guys that are entrepreneurs in the game, and they're really taking the PLL and doing something unique, you know, for our game, and I know you've been on the advisory board with them, and I'm sure they've picked your ear plenty. Has that been an interest? I mean, like the jump in there and coach the PLL?
Well, you know what? Again, I think you have to listen. And Paul and I have chatted about it. You know, I'm blessed. I had a chance to be around two of the greatest players in the game in the last decade, and in my opinion, two of the best people. I'm more proud of them for that and the men they've become than the players they were. Their families were great. But Paul and I have had that conversation. Kyle and I have had it. You know, I wouldn't be against it. Is it what I want to do, you know, with my career? I want to be involved more with a young man's life. I love recruiting. I enjoy recruiting. I enjoy the relationship building with the families, and you know, seeing a high school junior, you know, come to your place as a freshman and in 4 years grow and develop into a man, into an All-American, into a national champion. Would I do it short term? I would think about it. You know, and Paul and I talked about it, and I think he was a little hesitant because he wasn't sure, you know, is that something that Coach Petromala would be willing to do? I'm not sure he sees me as that, you know, and again, you never know how people view you, But, you know, for right now, I would really love to get back into the college game. It's where my passion is. And I'd love to get back as a Division I coach. But, you know, there's a lot to be said for, you know, the opportunity to be a head coach at whatever level it is. And, you know, we'll just continue to evaluate what happens. And hopefully someone will, you know, feel like it's worth the conversation. And, you know, that's all I'm looking for is a conversation, an opportunity to get in the door. And then, you know, then hopefully I can do my job from there.
So you've been out and doing, you know, obviously a lot of eclectic things. That's been awesome. And I know you you had a great relationship with your assistant coaches as well as your players. And then now you're watching Maryland, you're seeing Bobby Benson, and I'm sure, are you watching the Maryland offense, and you see through Bob, you know, Coach Benson's eyes and what's going on, and are you rooting for him? Is it something also where you look at and say, hey, if I do get back in the saddle, I know he's probably good there, and you're looking, evaluating, like, some, like you said, Mac Brown looks for assistant coaches. Have you been making a good list of guys as you're out there and saying, wow, you know, because there are so many talented, you know, coaches out there. I mean, there's just a lot going on, I think, in that realm. I'd be intrigued to hear your thoughts on it.
Sure. Well, the beauty of my position now is that I'm able to get to know some other guys and some young guys a little bit better. I've always tried to be very open and talk to and develop relationships with the younger coaches. You know, I was blessed that guys like Tony Seaman and Bill Tierney and Dave Cottle, you know, they did that for me when I was a young guy. And, you know, they didn't have to take the time to talk to, a young green coach that, was trying to get in the game, but they did. You know, so I've learned that, and my goal is to always try to, you know, pay it forward a little bit. I'm well aware of Bob Benson's talents. You know, when we were at Hopkins for a number of years, we were, you know, our offensive efficiency, I think for the last, you know, 7 or 8 years was in the top 10. I think he's one of the brightest young coaches out there. I don't know if his desire is to be a head coach or not. You know, that's for him and his family decide. I do support him. I'll always support him. I stay in touch with him. We text back and forth, you know, every couple of days. I'm always interested to ask him questions and learn what he's learning. Coach, I think one of the things I'm most impressed with Bobby is, you know, he went into a situation where, you know, they've achieved an awful lot of success, and they've got a fairly, you know, veteran group with Bernhardt, you know, who might be, you know, the, or if one, not one of the best players in the country, you know, and, you know, they got a fairly veteran group with Wisnowskis and, you know, those kids, you know, and sometimes it's easy to want to go in and change everything. And I think Bobby was a perfect fit. He knows the Big Ten very well, knows the defensive coordinators, knows their style of play, knows the Maryland player. He's not trying to make wholesale changes. He's gone in. I'm sure it's taken some time as a Hopkins guy at Maryland to develop some relationships and trust. And I know Bobby was keenly aware of that. And he hasn't gone in and tried to reinvent the wheel. You know, they've been successful, and he's been smart enough to allow that. And sometimes your best coaching decisions are to not change anything at all. And I think he's added small pieces, but has really done a great job of allowing those kids to be exactly who they are and what they are.
So we on this show, we usually bring on the legends, and I say usually, I mean, I think, yeah, I said, I'm a big fan of yours. So I'm sitting here listening to you and listening and learning.
Well, you're awful kind. Thank you.
A legendary status, not only as a coach, though, and I mean, we haven't even talked about, you know, Dave Petromala, the player. What type of player, where do you put yourself in the history of this game?
Well, what type of player I was a pain in the rear end to coach, that's for sure. You know, I think about, you know, they always say, you know, to coaches that were players, you know, could you have coached yourself? I believe I could have. I would have appreciated my competitiveness and my love for the game, but my lack of discipline sometimes as a youth and a teenager. I had dinner with Coach Don Zimmerman and Dr. Les Matthews, who was an assistant for us. I stay in touch with Coach Zim all the time. We have dinner, you know, every couple of months, and I can't imagine the level of patience that he must have had. You know, so I was a guy that loved to play. You know, I didn't grow up with lacrosse. I didn't start playing. I played my ninth grade year as a midfielder, didn't play in 10th, and then picked up defense in 11th. So I wasn't one of these kids that had a stick in his hand since, you know, they were in kindergarten or first grade. My dad was a baseball guy, so when we played catch, he brought out his baseball mitt and played catch that way. But I loved the game. I loved to compete. I loved the strategy, and I was really blessed to be with, you know, first-class coaches as men, you know, and as tacticians of the game, you know, Bill Tierney, Don Zimmerman, a guy like Fred Smith, who most people don't know, was, you know, one of the all-time great coaches that I've ever been around and was a volunteer. So I'm sure I was a handful to coach as a player, but I would have appreciated my competitiveness and my desire to be great. You know, I've always said one of my greatest regrets was that I wasn't a captain of a Hopkins team. And as you look back, I don't think I ever deserved to be one. You know, at that time of my life, being a leader wasn't the most important thing to me. Being a great player, helping my team win a championship was more important, you know, and now being a great leader is very important to me. So, you know, it's interesting as you look back on your career. You know, where I fit, I have no idea. That's for someone else to decide. I was just fortunate to be on some talented teams with some great players and some really outstanding people and coaches.
Your comment about being undisciplined, and is that, did you always know that? And I always find this an interesting question, because when you're going through it, did you know that as a young player that you were that, or did you kind of do a retrospective and look back and say, no, I was a tough guy to coach?
I knew it socially. I got away to college and I enjoyed college. I'd be the first to admit that. And, you know, I think enjoying the experience is important. You know, you don't get to do this again. Now, that said, I was an undisciplined young man in the classroom, and I was, again, really blessed that I had great mentors and people to, when I got off the rails a little bit, to guide me back on track. You know, and I'm so grateful to those people, as I mentioned, especially Coach Zimmerman. But I knew it off the field. I didn't know it on the field so much, so I didn't think going over a guy's head at the goal line was an undisciplined thing. And I believed, you know, hey, if you got 8 out of 10, that's 80%. That's a pretty good ratio. You know, I didn't realize that, you know, those other two times of the 20%, that could cost you a game. And again, being with the right coaches, and I was at the right place at the right time with the right people. You know, they helped me understand that, and I hope that by my senior year, I figured it out and became a more disciplined player and an even better teammate by the time I left college.
Coach, has there ever been a time where you're out there in the fall, the first couple practices, and then you walk back in your office and you're like, I'm coaching myself out there? That was, like, is there any player that's
totally
reminded you of you as a player?
Yeah, you know, again, from a lacrosse standpoint, no, because, you know, you don't see a lot of takeaway guys now. The sticks are different. The size, strength, and athleticism and balance of these young men these days is very different. So not so much as a, you know, style in terms of play. But in terms of the kind of young man, yeah, absolutely. I've had a couple. And, You know, those are the guys sometimes you tend to be hardest on because, you know, you're looking in the mirror and you know the ability that they have and you know what they're capable of. They just don't realize it. So I would say no as a player and yes as an individual.
Now, I'm in the process this year of coaching my daughter. This is the fourth year I've coached her in her senior year as well. And I've coached my sons. It is different. I think of coaching each one of them has been very uniquely different. How has that been for you to coach your boys at practice? And do you see, how do they respond to your coaching?
Well, you know, I've got twin boys, Dominic and Nicholas. Nicholas is a defenseman. Dominic is an attackman. Unfortunately, Nicholas tore his ACL, so he's not playing. And I've been awful proud, just from a parenting point of view as to how he's approached adversity and how he's attacked adversity and looked at it as a bump in the road and a stepping stone and a building block. And I haven't had a chance to coach him. The other guy's probably more like me on the field, a little bit more flying by the seat of his pants and, a little bit more of a risk taker, but both are very similar in terms of their competitive nature. I've loved it. And I told both of them, it's funny. They told me one day on a car ride home, after they came down to Hopkins and watched the practice and, we were talking and they said, Dad, don't talk to us like your players. Don't treat us like you treat your players. They looked at me and said, it's like you're talking to your guys. I said, well, yeah, that's exactly right. Because I treat my guys like I treat my sons. So, they're one and the same. And when I decided to come over and just help again, I don't go on a sideline game day. I don't believe it would be great for my career, and I don't think it would be, appropriate to do that to Brian Farrell, who has been extraordinarily generous, allowing me to come out and put a whistle and be around my boys and help coach. He's done a great job here at Boys Latin. I love that my kids play for him. But I asked them, would you be okay with it? I asked the boys, and if they had said, no, Dad, we don't want that, I wouldn't have done it. But they both said, yeah, that would be great. I rarely call Dominic by his name. I call him A9. And I told him, you got a choice. I can either be really easy on you and easier on you than I am anybody else, or I can be really tougher. You take the pick, but it's one or the other. And the answer was, well, we'd rather you be tougher on us. And, that's the way it is. I'm probably a little bit tougher in them and probably more so privately than I am out on the field. But I try to be respectful of them. And when we leave the field, not be the coach all the time and be a dad and be a parent and, ask them if they're enjoying it and make sure that they're, doing the right things in the classroom and off the field and, I'm not their head coach. Brian Farrell's their head coach. I'm not their offensive coordinator. Mike Williams is, and my job is to let those guys coach, my kids the way they see fit. And my job as a volunteer is to do that, volunteer and help where I can, and then on game day go up in the stands and be a parent.
Well, Coach, that's it's amazing. I've always, I coached my son at one point, and I found it tough. I personally found it tough because, to your point, it's, are you going to be tough on them? Are you going to be easy on them? And there's that, it's like the devil and the angel on your shoulders, right? Trying to figure out how to play it out. And, I did have that conversation. How do you want me to treat you? And he said, he wore number 8. And so he said, just treat me like number 8. And it was an interesting how did the kids surprise you when they said that?
No. I like to believe I know my sons pretty well. And they both like to be very successful in the sport, and they care about their teammates. And I'll be honest with you, at times, they get a little grief for being, the coach at Hopkins' son or the former coach at Hopkins' son. Mm. With that comes, as I've told them, you know, a little bit of responsibility, and maybe a little bit of pressure. You know, and I've always told them that will make them stronger, not make them worse. And they've accepted that, you know, head on, and they've attacked those situations, and you know, they just want to be treated like the rest of the guys, and they want to be coached, and they want you to push them and help them be better. And you know, on the field, that's my job. You know, it's tough when you get in the car sometimes, and you want to, you know, you want to tell them, you know, you took three shots low to high today, and how about we shoot the ball over him once or twice? But you got to bite your tongue at moments, and again, let the coaches coach them as well.
Gotcha. So, Coach, one last question, then we'll let you go. We really appreciate the time you gave us, but looking ahead, you got the tournament coming up. Do you have any? You have a favorite in this tournament?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that question. You know, I'm obviously very partial to North Carolina because of, you know, both my twins are going to play for Joe Bresci and Dave Metzbauer and Kevin Understeen, and they've been, you know, kind enough to afford them an opportunity to do that. You know, so I'm emotionally tied there, and I'm close with Joe. You know, I root for Bob Benson and want him to do well. You know, at the end of the day, I want to go see some great lacrosse. You know, I already got tickets to go over to see Georgetown and Syracuse play tomorrow night. I want to go see Georgetown play defense. I like the way they play defense. I think Kevin does a great job. I'm going to bring my notebook and watch as a fan and observe as a coach. But I think it's going to be a great tournament. I think a couple of teams, you know, during the season have separated themselves. You know, Maryland's done a great job, and I know they've taken a lot of, you know, grief for being in the Big Ten, and the Big Ten maybe not being what everybody thought it would be. But what they accomplished is no easy accomplishment, playing teams twice and three times and winning every one of those games. You know, I love Carolina and their balance and, you know, how unselfish they are on offense. You know, I think, you know, as I said, Georgetown, I love the way they play defense. You know, Syracuse's midfielders, I enjoy watching those guys. And clearly Duke is a tremendous team. I don't think people are talking about Notre Dame enough. You know, Kevin's done a really great job with those guys. And I think the thing that I've marveled at is how these guys have incorporated some of these graduate students, and maybe so many of them, so well. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you got Denver, who Bill Tierney's my mentor, and, you know, guy just continues to win, you know, no matter where he is, no matter who he's got. So I'm excited. I'm excited. I'm going to work with ESPN during the semifinals in the studio, and really looking forward to watching some great games.
Well, Coach, that was a great dance. I appreciate you dancing through that answer and not giving us the winner, so we'll all have to figure it out ourselves. But good insight.
I was afraid to say, if this was dodgeball, Coach would still be in. He'd still be in.
You know what? I still got plenty of coach in me. I'm not prepared to make that choice. And, you know, I do appreciate you putting me on the spot. I'm sorry to do my best dance, but you know, got a lot of emotional ties and relationships, and, you know, just want to see all those guys do well.
We get it. We get it. So, Coach, listen, we appreciate you on the show and really look forward. I look forward to seeing you back on the sidelines, hopefully soon. Unless there's something you want to announce on the show now. I mean, I can give you a little extra time if you want.
You know what? I wish there was something to announce. The only thing I got to announce is Boys Latin's got a big game against Loyola tomorrow at 10 a.m. That's what's on my docket right now. So we got to walk through in about 10 minutes and make sure the boys are as prepared as they can be to play against a really good Loyola team who has a great defender on their team, Billy Dwan, who is the son of my former assistant. So Coach Dwan and I will get to sit in the stands together and watch our boys play against each other at the same end of the field.
That's great.
That's great. Hey, Coach, are the MIA playoffs, is there somewhere where our listeners or even myself, we can watch those games? Or are they being broadcasted anywhere?
Yeah, they'll be on. We've done a game of the week in the semis are going to be broadcast through Legendary Sports Group. Our group is doing that, actually. And Corey Sports is going to broadcast them. So they'll be on. And then you can always go to YouTube and watch those, you know, a couple hours after the game. They're usually on there.
Yeah, I highly recommend that for any of our listeners to catch these games. I mean, I coached in that league myself, and I'll tell anybody, I mean, it's just such a high level of high school lacrosse. It's phenomenal, and you won't regret watching those games for anything. So best of luck to your boys.
Yeah, I probably missed a really good opportunity right there to give you, like, the website or the link to go watch it. I probably did that, and I apologize for doing it. But you'll be able to go on and find it. The Corrigan Sports, or if you go to Legendary Sports Group, you know, our website, you can find out what games are on there as well.
Well, Coach.
Perfect. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate you. We'll let you get to the walkthrough and go through it. And good luck to your guys today and boys.
You guys were awesome. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed our conversation.
All right, Coach. Great chatting with you. Have a good one.
All right, guys, take care.
Yep. So Bear, I got to, you know, I didn't tell you. This is a guy that I always kind of looked up to, this coach, Petromala. And he's always been, you know, one of my favorites in looking. So thank you for getting him on the show. Usually, you know, we do our best to get folks on the show, but you hit one on the park here for me.
No, Coach is great. I mean, he's obviously very intense, but also very humble and has done so much for the game. And I know when I was coaching with the machine and we would, you know, want to come out and watch a practice, he was always wide open and invite you over and, you know, do the tour of the place and talk to you about any of his players, and just always phenomenal, you know. And I think, you know, I think there may be some opportunities for me to do a couple of things with that the Legends group, and certainly fortunate. I know I've talked to Coach Cottle. I'm looking forward to even, you know, the opportunity to work with Coach Petra and learn from him. You know, he's, like I said, he's a guy always hungry to learn, and I think that that's something for our listeners, for any coaches that listen. You know, it's like you listen to him, it's inspiring, you know, to hear a guy that's legendary in our game that says, hey, I'm still learning out here. And, you know, it's that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, that was, it's interesting to hear that. And it's also interesting to hear, you know, assessing folks and, you know, as he said, he's getting prepared, you know, he's getting prepared for that next step, whatever that might be, which is kind of cool. It really kind of tells you what kind of coach he is too. Hey, I got a question for you though, and this is a little off topic. Well, it's NCAA. This whole, you know, roster thing, and you're only allowed to bring 45. Now, I guess they're saying that if you have a vaccine, you can sit on the sidelines. You were in the college ranks and that whole bit. I mean, how much does this affect a team? You know, they're going 45 from 52. I mean, you know, you're talking about seven bodies essentially, but how much does that affect a college team if you don't have seven people on the field? And I know Donowski, for example, talked about it and said, hey, you know, we're going to cut back on some of the ancillary group. We'll put the equipment guy in the front row and that kind of stuff. But does it really screw with the players' brains on this, or is it distraction?
I think it's one of those things where a team never wants to leave anybody behind. You know, if everyone's been contributing at some level, you know, which they all have, whether it's practice or in a game, you know, it's, you know, you just don't want to leave anybody behind, and you want them to have that experience. Overall, I think, you know, you're playing 20, at the most, you're playing 22, 23 guys in a game. I mean, that's a lot. So is it really going to affect your game, you know, as far as like, you know, your strategy? I don't think so. I mean, you know, at the pro level, you get to 19 guys. You know, you're addressing 19 guys. So figure it out. You know, like, you're going to figure that piece out. I don't think it has anything to do with the strategic part of it. It's just more of a, hey, these guys have been through enough. You know, they lost their season last year. And some of these guys are watching maybe a grad student come in and take their job or knock them down on the depth chart. And they're, you know, and it's just a reward. You know, it's a reward. Like, hey, you've helped us get here. You deserve to be on the sideline. And really, you know, let's face it. You know, they've always had a roster limit, or, you know, some playoffs have roster limits. It's always been a thing, but you know, let's face it, you know, 45 guys, 52 guys. I mean, COVID doesn't have a number cut off. You know, it just increases the chances, but it's like.
No, they do. It's 45, apparently.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, like I said, I've always said this everyone, COVID's not dumb. COVID rules are dumb.
You know? Like, oh, so. All right. Well, Bear, we got a lot of good lacrosse coming up, and we will chat with everybody next Friday again.
Yeah, exciting.
But good stuff, man. Enjoy the rest of your day. An unusual time for us to be on the air, but
yeah,
a good guest.
My second second cup of coffee. It's like second cup of beer or something at this time. I don't know. What do we got?
You think 329 is like a second bear beer or a bourbon or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, something. Suburban or something. I don't know. These Fridays late shows.
All right, man. Listen.
All right, my friend. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too, man. Take it easy.